Welcome to Season 2 of the WCET Frontiers podcast, where we discuss innovations in the practice and policy of digital learning in higher education. This is Lindsay Downs with WCET. This season, we're highlighting the work and the journeys of some outstanding folks in our field who are passionate about teaching and learning, digital learning, access, and student success. Today's podcast is sponsored by the WCET annual meeting. There's still time to join us. You can register to attend our annual meeting with us October 19th through the 21st. Check out our website, wcet.wichy.edu, for more information. Today on the podcast, I'm thrilled to interview Dr. Mordecai Brownlee, who serves as the president of the Community College of Aurora in Colorado. He also serves on the board of directors for the American Association of Community Colleges. Wonderfully, he will be joining us at the annual meeting this year as our keynote speaker. His presentation will be focused on how to use technology to create mission-driven and equity-centered academic pathways. Today, Dr. Brownlee and I are going to talk about his role, how he got to where he is, important lessons, moms and how wonderful they are, and hacks for working in higher education today. So without much more ado, enjoy my interview with Dr. Brownlee.
All right, thanks. And now we're here with our guest for today, Dr. Mordecai Brownlee. He is the president of the Community College of Aurora, and I just learned a columnist for EdSurge, so we'll definitely be sharing those articles with you soon. Dr. Brownlee, thank you so much for being with us here today for the start of season two of the WCET Frontiers podcast.
Well, Lindsay, I'm absolutely honored to be with you hanging out on this beautiful, beautiful day, and I've been looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah. Well, in case our listeners didn't know, you are going to be our closing keynote at the WCET annual meeting this year. So we were excited to invite you to start out this season of the podcast, start out our theme of getting to know some outstanding folks in the digital learning, educational technology field. So yeah, welcome. Thanks again.
Thank you.
To get started, tell us about your role. And in this way, I'd really like to hear about what you actually do.
Yeah, you know, that's pretty funny because when I share with folks that I'm a president of a college, they're like, that's great. So what do you do? My responsibility is to, in my opinion, to do two things. Number one, ensure that the institutional mission is totally being advanced every day. So within that institutional mission, we think about who's serving. So that's the institution and who is the institution serving. And that's a job in its own. And then we have the way in which we're serving those students. In our case, we talk about here at CCA, high quality instruction and high quality student support services. So it's my key number one to make sure that our diverse communities, we're the most diverse college in the state of Colorado. 67% of our students are students of color. 52% of our students are first gen. And so we take that very seriously. So our diverse student population, high quality instruction, high quality student supports, and then making sure that the outcome of that mission is being fulfilled, which in our case is employment and transferability. And the second part of my job that I do every day is clear the path for our faculty and our instructors and our staff. That can be by creation of infrastructure. What does it look like to have systems developed that currently don't exist, or processes, protocols, practices developed that don't exist to give some bones around the work that they do, or maybe that's resourcing their ideas and making sure that there is a system of innovation so we can continue to evolve in the work that we do and ensure relevance in this educational space. So that's what I dedicate my day, every day, all day to doing and advancing CCA and that work.
I like what you said with that, the system of innovation. I don't think I've heard, is that kind of creating a culture there? Are you kind of that are considering innovation, or can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so Community College of Aurora is the youngest community college in the Colorado Community College system. We're 39 years young. And we started from very humble beginnings, Lindsay. So May 20th, 1983, after years and years, and I'm talking 20 plus years of attempting to get a community college in this community, the state of Colorado finally gave us our own community college, except there was one catch. Inflation was higher than it was now, and they were like, you can have your own community college, but we have no building to give you. We have no land to give you. Essentially, good luck. So the educators back then, 39 years ago, they didn't take it as an excuse. And there's part of me that really wants to wonder if there were those that were like, they're not going to make it. Well, let me tell you, those educators decided we were going to make it. They started teaching classes at libraries, at daycare centers, at the Air Force Base, at parks, public centers. Fast forward, because of our humble beginnings, there has been a bit of still catch up that we play in comparison to other institutions. And, you know, our footprint is smaller, right? We're getting ready to break ground on a brand new building here September 19th that we're really excited about. But it will be our first capital campaign project in 23 years. And so when we talk about innovation, for us, what that means is, you know, creating systems for there to be new program development, for there to be new building development, for there to be new programs, not just academic, but also in terms of the student experience. And so that means a lot to us. The other thing is, too, is when I describe CCA, we are a strong, we're 10,788 students. We're a strong institution that is under renovation. So anyone that watches HGTV, I swear I can watch HGTV like all day long. And HGTV, so we are currently in that mode of renovation because we have 100 programs on the books, but so much has changed over the past 39 years. And many of these programs we developed years ago under a different economy. And what we've now learned is that industry is coming back and saying, hey, that was great 10 years ago. That was even great 5 years ago. We need something different. We won't even hire somebody with that credential today. We need something different. So this is the reason why we're under renovation. There's several programs that we're currently in the process of closing. We're in the process of developing, doing the homework to develop new programs, new buildings, facelifts in different ways. And so we're truly an institution that's under renovation, but we feel very good about that we're going to be setting a course to become the premier lead college in the state of Colorado. That's what we want to do and be one of the best in the nation.
Great, absolutely great mission. And sounds like a great way to go about it. I like how you phrased that, you know, doing the homework to get those different programs, those innovations happening.
Absolutely.
So you're working directly with those who will be employing your graduates.
Absolutely. I'll give you one example. You know, so for this new building, it's going to be, you know, I think the totality of it, as I think about the entire footprint, roughly 64,000 square feet. The program on it will be about 55,000 square feet. But within this building, we'll have STEM technology. So we're working with a lot of engineering firms that we're going to be engaging with, clean energy, also the power mechanic portion. So that we call the STEM power mechanic applied technology. So power mechanics for us, we have two key partners of Wagner Equipment, who is huge in this state and around this region. Also Transwest out of Brighton, Colorado, but again, interstate organization. And then working with Build Strong Academy, which they're going to be moving their headquarters into this building. This is directly those that know of Oakwood Homes in the state of Colorado, but Oakwood Homes has their own academy for micro-credentialing called Build Strong. And so we want to work directly with partners to create these non-credit to credit tracks and get students employed, get students in a space of social and economic mobility. And so, you know, it's direct partnership with industry. We want to stand right there with them so students can really see, now we got to change the game. It's not just about pursue credentials with the hopes to get a job. Let's get you already connected with the job while you're pursuing the credential, right? And so really thinking about this a bit differently. Yeah.
Wow. So just to understand a bit more about the programs you offer, are they mostly in person or do you have some that are online? Do you have hybrid options?
We do.
All of the above?
So, yeah, all the above, right? And I will tell you that the One of the positives of this last 3 years that we've all been in and, mm-hmm. and enduring, I should say more two, going on three, that we've endured is we have a stronger infrastructure now for delivering hybrid online. I will tell you that, again, based off of our humble beginnings, at one point in time, CCA really stepped away from online instruction. We just didn't have the workforce as well as the capacity to do it. So the in-seat experiences for us were really key. And because of some of the nature of these programs that we've been known for historically in this community, it had to be a face-to-face experience. I'll give you a good case in point. English second language. For those that know, Aurora, Colorado is by far, as you look at the census tract in Colorado, pound for pound, the most diverse community in the state of Colorado. And that goes back to some histories about this being the place, the city where immigrants into this country, not only into the state, but into the country, could afford to live. They may serve in Denver, but they could only afford to live in Aurora. Fast forward over like 40, 50 years, and just our histories, we still hold that title of the most diverse community or city in the state of Colorado. So English second language for us is huge. We'll have 1,400 students alone enrolled in English second language. And that is not something that we have found to date that can be taught as effectively as it can in the in-seat experience, but very different than some of our English or math courses, even science courses that we can now really get into the hybrid or the high flex or the total online space. So I would say in terms of a split, looking at where we land, we had a pretty healthy split of, I would say, about 60 to 70% in seat with the remainder being online. And I would only imagine over time that will continue to have some flux.
For sure. And are you students, do you see any students that are calling for more offerings in either option?
You know, very interestingly, what we're watching continue to be a barrier, which is a bit heartbreaking, is the lack of access, right? So I think that as a community, you know, 51% of our students identify on the low socioeconomic scale because they qualify for Pell. And that's of the ones that we can get to complete the FAFSA. So I would only imagine it's higher.
Yeah.
We are still experiencing this desert of accessibility in the technology and availability, whether it be through hardwired, talking laptops, or whether it being through Wi-Fi access. And many of these students are still attempting to take these courses using their cell phones. And that is in even spotty based on their connectivity. So it's interestingly, I think that we will continue to monitor where we are as a community, our service area, and just take a look and see. Now, what we've done is to aid, we have a laptop loan program. We have resources available to assist with discounted Wi-Fi access. However, as we think about some of these challenges on the poverty scale for some of our students, in order to have some sustainable Wi-Fi, you have to have a home, a roof over your head. And in some cases, we're just dealing with shelter. So Wi-Fi access is very low on the totem pole there. So we've got some challenge, but we understand our community, and we'll continue to work with our legislators and our community leaders to find more ways to expand our outreach to our community.
Yeah. A lot of connection points there with the community that you're able to work with them.
Right on.
It's wonderful. Yeah. So you keep hearing about that digital divide, whether it's, you know, hardware or the Wi-Fi access or just experience with technology, and it fortunately continues to be that kind of a devastating issue for our students. But I like how you phrase that, the desert of accessibility. That's a big one. But so would that be one of the bigger challenges you're facing right now, or what else is kind of on your, I guess, your priority list or your challenge list?
You know, it's an exciting time to be in higher education, especially in this community college space. I say that because the biggest challenge right now is that, in my opinion, disruption has finally come to higher education on a macro scale. And mm-hmm. it excites me because it's this understanding that finally, as a sector, we're going to accept that we cannot continue to do the same thing. You can't keep giving the same experience that was offered 30 and 40 and even 20 years ago and thinking that it's still going to be effective. And I believe that institutions all over this nation are now beginning to have these hard conversations. The pandemic only exacerbated a bit of these conversations. But now as we come out of this year, I think this is going to be a very telling year, academic year, 2022-2023 school year, because many of our institutions are now finally rolling off of the Higher Education Emergency Relief Funds, the HERF funds. And so as we now make our way into the 23-24 school year, respectively speaking, the training wheels are coming off. And institutions are going to have to figure out, do you know how to ride that bike? We've been able to claim losses, revenue losses, and then be able to supplement what would have been sustainable, significant, revolutionary impacts financially for our institutions. And now we're kind of like, okay, you know, we're having hard conversations here at CCA. I'm so grateful for our faculty and our instructors and our staff that understand. We've been talking about the disruptions. We've been talking about the industry and the economic disruptions. We've been talking about the societal disruptions and just the decisions that we now have to make. And the reality that for the very first time in many cases, we're having to say, how are we going to be relevant? Higher education hasn't had to ask that question. How are we going to be relevant? It was kind of like this arrogance of the ivory tower that we just assumed that folks got to come through our doors. You're not going to make it unless you get an education. Right. But now industry has shown us in economics and have showed us in the various innovations in technology that they can totally bypass an higher education experience. And we're even watching now that due to this years and years of bureaucracy and slow moving and lack of response in higher education, that industry is now doing their own academies. They're totally bypassing higher education. They're going to middle schools and they're starting their apprenticeship programs and they're getting students right out of high school. And so now higher ed is kind of saying, hey, we're here. And industry is like, we'll see you later. We'll catch up with you. And they're moving on. And so it's exciting in that I really believe that community colleges are best positioned to be responsive, but it is now a heavy lift to turn a ship without losing the cargo to get it right on the right path and course. But it's a committed community of educators, which we have here, that understand what it's going to take. And I believe fully that we'll get it done.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're willing to take some steps that are different than what you've done before. You know, I like how you were talking about having those partners right there on campus that maybe were providing alternative credentials that really would have been a competition, but now they're involved with your own students. They're right there in a building. I hadn't heard of someone doing that. Very nice.
I believe that we can be a shining star, not only just for Colorado or for other community colleges around the nation to say, okay, this is what it can look like. And that's why I fell in love with this institution. You know, I moved from Texas. I was most recently serving for the past 5 years as vice president in the Alamo College System for St. Philip's College. And when I knew I was ready to take that next step, having some intimate conversations with institutions, when CCA and I began to have conversations, it was like, oh, this is an untapped jewel. This is a institution that hasn't even realized its full potential and its beauty, and it's primed to be the next era leader of higher education.
Yeah, that's where it's happening. I got to go there.
Right on.
So you mentioned the step right before this. How did you get to this point? What brought you to your position now?
You know, I'm a firm believer. I was just having a conversation with an executive from Amazon today, and they were talking about all of their success. And I asked them, we were sitting across, we ate at this pretty good breakfast spot that I've got to go back to. We were having this conversation, and I says, who planted the seed for you? Because I'm a firm believer that those of us that experience these various levels of success, somebody had to plant the seed. Where'd the seed come from? And they were like, oh, my dad did this work. I'm like, got it. For me, I was raised by a single mother who was an educator, who worked in the K-12 space, retired as a special education educator. And that's where my seed plant came from, right? And so I tested at developmental levels and went to community college. And to make matters worse, I failed developmental math. I was working overnight shifts and different jobs trying to make ends meet, and was working as temporary help and was told, oh, you know, thank y'all, we don't need y'all anymore. And someone told me about work study jobs at the college. And so I went on ahead and signed up for work study jobs. And from there began to receive mentorship in a way that I had never received it before. And that light bulb began to go off for me. And I really asked myself as I was getting ready to graduate from community college, what's the job that creates this magic for everybody else? And I'm like, well, I think the president. I was like, cool, that's what I'm gonna be. And that's where, you know, for me, that's where it kind of just kicked off. It was, never thought about how hard it would be. I never was really focused on, you know, all the letters behind my name. I'm grateful to have a doctorate, grateful to have an associate's, a master's, a bachelor's, my associate's degree being the most that I'm proud of. But it was a means of an end to just get to where I needed to be, because at that point it was a passion. And so my journey is only to say that I've been able to serve in different spaces. I'm honored now to be a board member of the American Association of Community Colleges and to be a part of think tank conversations at DC with Jobs for the Future and really think about what is going to be the future of this work that we do. But it all was planted from a seed of a mom that was an educator, right? And so I think that for anybody that's listening to this, everyone has that passion. Everyone has that thing that they can do without thinking, without, it's just innate within them. And I think that rather than chasing a title, rather than chasing money, chase your passion, chase your purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think that your purpose then makes way much deeper for what anything or anyone else can provide you.
Wow, that was beautiful. And I love that you credit your mom. That's pretty cool.
Right on. I talked to her this morning.
Yeah. Oh, good. But I hope you tell her or she can listen to this. And
that's right. We'll send it to her.
Shining moment. Well, that sounds like a very important lesson to learn, but are there any other lessons that you've learned over the course of getting to this point?
Yeah, you know, I will tell you, so one of the things I'm blessed to also be able to do is I serve as a columnist for EdSurge, and just this week I released a new article that I shared the three biggest takeaways that I've learned in my first year being a community college president. In that article, I think one of the things that I think is most impactful that I learned over this past year and just rediscovered is that I shouldn't do more for an institution than I would do for my own family. And what I mean by that is that it's so easy to show up here early, leave late, give everything I have to this institution, do multi-day strategic planning, this, that, and, you know, fundraise here and focus my entire day about strategy and outcomes. But if I'm not putting that same intensity into the success of my wife and my two children and even our dog, then what good am I to be this wonderful, amazing individual for the world, but I can't do that for the folks that matter most? And so I would just say that was one of the bigger takeaways. I think the other thing that can happen in some of these positions of influence, that we get more caught in the title than the responsibility. And this is about responsibility. All of us, and I mean this with love, all of us are replaceable. Folks, would they miss me? Yes, they would miss me, and they would go and find somebody else to do it. And I say that to say we can never forget the significance of humbleness and appreciation that we must show for the spaces that we've been given an opportunity to serve. And I think that it is that degree of humbleness and understanding that keeps us centered and rooted in our why. And that's what I think continues to have us pursue after purpose day in and day out. When the times are good and when the times are bad, we're still effective in our work because we're still allowing the driver of passion to center us versus the fear of the loss of position or the need to be validated in spaces. We should already have that sense of validation. Mm. No job should be able to validate us. We've got to be able to look in the mirror and have that own peace for what it is that we say we do. So I talk about that and more in the story. So hopefully folks take a look and read that. And I hope it helps somebody.
We will make sure to have a link to that included in our show notes for sure. And hopefully that'll lead to your other articles as well. So yeah, I absolutely adore that when you think about, you know, yeah, don't follow the title, right? Just follow the passion and it'll get you there. That's awesome.
Right on.
That'll keep everybody happier. We all did that, I think. So we're kind of heading toward the end of our time, but I really was interested if you had a kind of a favorite hack for workers in higher ed or in community colleges, you know, productivity or just a way to get things done, I guess. What would you suggest to our listeners?
Yeah, I would say start every day with purpose. You've heard me talk a little bit about that. When I wake up every day, I have an affirmation statement that I read to myself. I recite it to myself. It's a personal affirmation statement that I have written for myself where I recite and I affirm for myself what is the most important things for me in my life that matter the most. And then I take a moment for meditation to not only reflect on that affirmation, but to ask myself some questions internally about where is the extra noise coming from in my mind? Like what is fogging up my mental space that I need to address, call out, name, and get to the root of so we can move past that noise? Because that noise clouds the space of purpose. And so I take the time to do that every day to center myself in that. And then I get to work. And so for me, I'm list driven. And I understand that there are things that I just can't get to in a run of a day. There's only so much time in a day. But I do my best to identify three things that I say, you know what? These are the things that I know I must accomplish for the day. And then what can easily happen when I show up, the whirlwind can happen, right? Of
course,
you know, right? Crisis and everything is urgent and we need you here and we need you there. But I do my best to center myself, take those moments. And I think the biggest hack is purpose, because as others will attempt to pull you into their whirlwinds and their anxieties and their realities, to have the discipline to center myself and recenter myself so I don't become reactionary, I can still be proactive and centered and focused in the work that I do to make sure that when I get back in that vehicle and I'm headed home to my family, I know I left it all on the field. I did everything I was supposed to do for that day.
And then you're not distracted once you're at home as well.
There you go.
I love the idea of taking the time, clear out the distractions, focus on your purpose. And that would probably help you make your list. You're like, oh, this is important because this is related to my why today.
That's it.
And then you work hard and you're done with it when you leave.
That's right. I had a former supervisor two schools ago taught me, keep the main thing the main thing. And as simple as that sounds, at times it can be hard, but it's always important to keep the main thing the main thing.
Like that should be a t-shirt.
That's right.
I like it. So as I said at the beginning of our chat here, you're going to be our closing keynote at the WCT annual meeting this year.
Yes.
Which we are so excited about. Just down the road, right, in Denver.
That's right.
October. So yeah, tell us about your topic this year.
Yeah, so October 21st, can't wait. 11 a.m. is when it's planned for the keynote. Title will be Utilizing Technology to Create Mission-Driven and Equity-Centered Academic Pathways. And it's a bit of what we talked about, Lindsay, just earlier in our conversation about how are we going to utilize technology? How are we going to utilize the institutional mission? How are we going to utilize these industry clusters and pathways to create purpose for our students? How are we going to create new synergies that have not existed? How are we going to evaluate current processes and experiences and reimagine, and then get back to the integrations of technology in the advancement of the lives and careers of our students? And so I just look forward to having some time to where we have some laughs, we have some data, we have some real moments, and we have some opportunities for how we're all going to improve and be better educators in this space.
Oh, yeah, I am so excited, not only to see you, but to hear you chat about that, and bring it back to that, creating that system of innovation, right, and really helping us with our passion and helping students find theirs. So wonderful, wonderful. Hey, is there anything that you wish we'd talked about that we didn't? You can end with?
No, I mean, I feel like we covered so much. Thank you for what you do, Lindsay. Love the team at WCET. Honored to serve in that work that we do to support other educators around the country, and I would almost really say around the world. Really just, you know, on behalf of Community College of Florida, Colorado Community College System, excited to be here with you all and look forward to the continuance of the work that we'll do.
Great, wonderful. Well, thrilled to see you here in a few months. And hey, if you haven't registered yet for the WCET annual meeting, get that registration in so you can come and chat with Dr. Brownlee today there at the annual meeting. And we can continue this conversation.
Wow. Well, all I can say is thank you again to Dr. Brownlee for chatting with me for our season opener. You can learn more about Dr. Brownlee at itsdrmordecai.com, where you can also find all of his social media links, the publications like the recent one he discussed on EdSurge, and his video series, which is absolutely outstanding, and you should definitely check those videos out. I can't wait for his keynote next month at our annual meeting. So to close out each episode this season, I want to share something with you that I've learned over the past week or month or so. These may be work-related, or they might be personal-related, or just funny things that I've learned that I've decided I want to share with you. I'm hoping to include other WCET team members or our guests so you can hear from multiple voices. But this week, what I learned comes from our most recent blog post on WCET Frontiers, written by my WCET teammate and all-around wonderful person, Rosa Calabrese. Currently, she's writing a series for Frontiers on cybersecurity. It's in the context of higher education, though, and the most recent post is on password security. Now, I thought I knew plenty about passwords, but there's a whole background of information that I really had no idea about. So I enjoyed reading about Rosa's experiences in her digital forensics class, where she got to learn about programs that hackers use to crack passwords, one of which is oddly called Jack the Ripper. I also got to learn about the different ways passwords can be stored and encrypted to protect our information. You can check out that post at wcetfrontiers.org, see that post, see the other posts in her series, and all of our other weekly posts. So what'd you learn this week? Tweet what you learned at me, at Lindsay0427 on Twitter, or you can email me, ldowns@witchy.edu. This wraps up episode 1 of this season. Woohoo! Next time, we'll be starting a series with this year's 2022 WOW Award winners and nominees. It's going to be just great to learn more about the exciting projects and programs being implemented in higher education today. I definitely said WOW when I was hearing about them and talking over each nomination with our great panel of judges this year. So I bet you'll say WOW too. I'm Lindsay Downs with WCET and the WCET Frontiers podcast. Cheers.